welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, March 7th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway star's James Marino.
James, today was an interesting day over on the theatrical interwebs. Lots of conversations back and forth, lots of dream casting, lots of theoretical, ethical casting discussions. It was an interesting day over on the Twitter.com. It was fun.
You know, they say never read the comments, but today really was the day to read the comments.
Actually, I disagree. Anybody who follows both me and the one and only Robbie Rizal on Twitter, I actually tweeted at him just simply, hashtag don't read the comments.
There are some really harsh people out there, and I'm really sorry that they can't find the love instead of the hate. But let's get into what we're talking about. Lincoln Center will officially bring back My Fair Lady to Broadway next spring.
Yeah, yesterday, Lincoln Center Theater announced that in association with Nederlander Presentations, Inc., they will mount a new production of Lerner and Lowe's iconic musical, My Fair Lady. This revival will be the first Broadway production of the show in 25 years. With a book and lyrics by Alan J. Lerner and music by Frederick Lowe, the revival will be helmed by Lincoln Center's go-to Golden Age director, Bart Lashier. Previews are scheduled to begin on Thursday, March 22nd of 2018, with an opening night of April 19th. The production will occupy the Vivian Beaumont Theater, which means that the previously announced world premiere of Iyad Akhtar's new play, Junk, will be a limited run after beginning performances in September of this year. James, last year there were rumors, including a Riedel report, that LCT was courting Colin Firth to play the role of Henry Higgins, but that option seems to have since become unlikely. We also know that the role of Eliza Doolittle is a stated dream role for a number of actresses, including Laura Benanti and Laura Osnes, who already tweeted about wanting the role. We also know that Bartlett's regular muse, Kelly O'Hara, has previously expressed her desire to play the part at some point. However, having spoken to a source familiar with the planning of the show, it does appear that Bart and Lincoln Center are currently planning on casting a young unknown, much like Moss Hart did in casting a 21-year-old Julie Andrews in the original Broadway production. Now, James, I think I know where your casting loyalties lay in this discussion, but what say you about the casting of both Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle?
Well, the aforementioned women for Eliza Doolittle, I couldn't argue with any one of those. I would love that. And I would also throw into the mix my new crush, Danae Benton.
Mm, that's good, too. A lot of people are mentioning Cynthia Erivo, which would be great considering, you know, she doesn't actually have to fake the accent too much, although she has a different type of British dialect. But if the reports that I'm hearing, the things that I've been told are true, it's unlikely that any of those women will be considered for the role. James, you and I talked off air. If the plan is for Lincoln Center to cast a relatively unknown, I don't think they're going to go, you know, like NBC live musical route and cast somebody who has no professional experience. But if they do cast somebody who has limited to no you know, theatrical pedigrees, they're not a Tony winner or a Tony nominee, that means whoever plays Higgins will have to be a big enough star to kind of, you know, carry it a little bit. I mean, I Ken Watanabe is not exactly a household name, but he's a fairly big star for when they did King and I recently. I guess there really wasn't a huge star when Barton and Kelly did South Pacific, but I would just have to assume that if they were going after Colin Firth, they'd have to get some sort of name to play Henry Higgins if they're going complete unknown for Eliza.
Well, what about the Hugh Jackman or Patrick Stewart?
Patrick Stewart might be a little old for the role, but Hugh Jackman wouldn't be bad, I guess, if he is willing to do it. He's definitely a draw, so that would be pretty interesting. There's a lot of people that I wouldn't mind seeing, but you know, I think a lot of people are, I don't know how to say this delicately. Bart is a friend of Broadway Radio. He's a friend of yours. He's not exactly known for breaking molds in terms of casting, but I think a lot of people are optimistic that perhaps he could find either a Higgins, but more likely an Eliza, that is not the traditional white actor. You know, I don't know if that's something that they're considering. You mentioned Danae Benton. A lot of people have mentioned Cynthia Erivo. I would even throw out an Eva Noble Zeta. If, you know, she's obviously not an unknown, considering she's starring in a major Broadway musical right now, but she's young, and it would only be her second Broadway show. I think it would be very interesting, especially when you think about the dynamics of the British colonial system that was especially true during the time that My Fair Lady and Pygmalion were set. That could be very interesting, especially with somebody of Asian descent as well. So I'm interested to see if they do kind of think outside of the traditional, you know, Caucasian box here.
Well, I wonder if we can track down some of the kids that did Matilda 5 years ago, and we'll see what they look like.
I'm sure there's a database or four that you could find their names at least.
Really? Where would that database be?
I mean, I think the largest theatrical database is housed at Broadway World, but what do I know, considering I maintain it on a daily basis?
Staring at rows and columns all day long, are you?
Yes.
All right. Let's move forward. And let's put out there that if you, a listener, has any ideas about this, why don't you tweet at us and let us know what you think, and we'll follow it up tomorrow. Next up, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child leads the Olivier nominations.
Yeah, yesterday, Olivier winners Denise Gough and Matt Henry announced the 2017 nominees. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child notched a record-tying 11 nominations, which equals Hairspray's total in 2008. The play was nominated in the Best Actor, Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Best New Play, Best Director, Best Theater Choreographer, and Outstanding Achievement in Music categories, as well as a handful of technical ones as well. In the musical categories, the Old Vic's production of Groundhog Day leads with 8 nominations, including for Best Musical. It is also joined in that category by Dreamgirls, School of Rock the Musical, and The Girls. Some familiar Broadway names that received nominations are Andy Carl for Groundhog Day, Glenn Close for Sunset Boulevard, Amber Riley for Dreamgirls, Brian J. Smith and Cherry Jones for The Glass Menagerie, reprising roles that they played on Broadway, Ed Harris in The London Transfer of Barry Child, Ian McKellen for No Man's Land, Glenda Jackson in the gender-flipped King Lear. She actually is a former Olivier winner but hasn't won one since 1984. Also, Billy Piper for Yerma and Ruth Wilson for Hedda Gabler. We will have the full list of Olivier nominations in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to check them out. Now, James, I had this conversation with a coworker at Broadway World today where she thinks that all of these Olivier nominations means that Groundhog Day is going to be huge in New York. She is an admitted Tim Minchin devotee. And I'm just apprehensive. I love Tim Minchin as well. I've stated that we talked about this yesterday. I love Tim Minchin. But I'm also very well aware of the different musical theater sensibilities between West End crowds and Broadway crowds. And I just hope that we don't get our expectations up too high for Groundhog Day and think this is going to be the greatest thing in the world. Look at all the nominations it got in London. And then we're let down by a show that is still great, but maybe not meet those expectations when it opens here in New York later this spring. Does that make sense? Am I?
No, that's the total secret of most marketing and PR companies is that you lower expectations, and then have a big opening. And so, I think that's a natural tendency of your thought process there, and as well as this seems like it's mounting up to be an incredible race this season with a number of very strong contenders. So Groundhog Day is going to have to come out very, very strong. So I find the Olivier Awards very interesting because we keep on trying to equate them to the Tony Awards here mm-hmm. in the States. And they're kind of a different animal. They don't quite really go on a calendar year. They're like February to February. I'm not sure why that is, and that there's a certain number of performances that you have to adhere to in order to qualify for them, and it's run in a very different way than the Tony Awards are, and we could try to keep comparing apples to apples per se, but it's not quite that. So, but we'll stay on top of that and give you the updates through today on Broadway when we hear more of them. All right, let's talk about last week's Broadway grosses.
Yeah, James, this is one of those weeks that we kept assuming would happen eventually, but never really did. But we did see a decent decline in the Broadway grosses last week, despite two new shows joining the boards. Last week, the overall total sales for Broadway dropped 6.27%, despite the fact that there was an actual increase in total tickets sold, which is a little unusual, especially for new shows coming on board. In fact, there were only six shows that posted week-to-week gains. Amongst those, the largest posting a gain was Sunday in the Park with George, which went up only $160,000. That's a lot of money, but when you're talking about week-to-week gains, we usually see quite a bit more. Leading the week, as always, is Hamilton, but it did drop nearly $300,000 to come in at just over $2,835,000. It is followed in the seven-figure club by The Lion King, Wicked, Sunset Boulevard, again showing great gains with only seven performances. Then Aladdin, The Book of Mormon, Dear Evan Hansen, and Sunday in the Park with George at $1,053,015, breaking the seven-figure mark for just the first time in this Broadway run. Down at the bottom of the list is Sweat with only $53,000, but that's because it only had one performance. In terms of shows that played a full eight, now Significant Other saw a pretty disappointing drop of $63,000 all the way down to $165,131. That's not looking good, James. We talked about how great the word of mouth is for this show, but it is not looking like it's picking up into ticket sales so far. Also true is the next show up on the totem pole, In Transit. It fell another $43,000 down to $240,000-ish. Again, not sure how this one is continuing to run, but it is. Other than that, the two new shows I mentioned, Sweat, did about $54,000. Miss Saigon, in its first five performances, did a pretty impressive $723,243. That was not at full capacity at 95.7% and was only at 76.1% of its gross potential. But for its first week, when you assume that there's some comps out there, there's some tickets being taken for other purposes, and maybe even some discounts to get people in for the first few previews, that's pretty good. So James, overall, great for Miss Saigon. Not really great for a whole lot of other things. Shows like On Your Feet took another dip. You got to wonder how long that one's going to hold on as well. So this is one of those weeks that we anticipated happening during the winter. We haven't seen too many of them. So hopefully as spring breaks start to come later this month and more shows open, we can continue to see the numbers turn from red to black in terms of Broadway numbers.
Do you know if there's a database out there that tracks daily, I guess you can't really track dailies, but weekly grosses against weather?
I do not know.
I feel like last week it was really unexpectedly cold here in New York.
Was it?
And we were spoiled because we had some really beautiful days 2 weeks ago. So I wonder if people stayed in because it was very cold. And I definitely think, have you ever seen a Broadway stage manager's report? A Broadway stage manager's report will talk about, who was in the show, who was out of the show, what the house was like insofar as sales, when the curtain went up, when the intermission happened, when the curtain went down, all very, kind of Nate Silver type of stats. And they also have the weather report on there for the producers to review at a glance what that one performance was like. I wonder if that's something that somebody with the world's largest theatrical database could track.
No.
Okay. All right. So what's up in the show and casting news?
All right. Well, yesterday, the Classic Stage Company announced the complete casting for this spring's off-Broadway production of Stephen Sondheim's Pacific Overtures. Director John Doyle has assembled a cast that includes the legendary George Takei, the fantastic Anne Harada, as well as Kelvin Moon Lowe and more. The limited run will begin performances on Thursday, April 6th, and run through May 27th. Also yesterday, it was announced that Tam Mutu will be joining the Seattle run of the Broadway-bound revival of The Secret Garden. Mutu will replace the previously announced Michael Xavier Xavier, who will be a little busy in Sunset Boulevard during the Fifth Avenue Theater run, since Sunset has extended into June. Mutu will be playing the role of Archibald Craven. Led by our friend Tony winner Daisy Egan, the production will begin on April 14th and will run through May 6th. In addition to the principals of Mutu, Egan, Tony nominee Josh Young, Lizzie Klemperer, Charlie Franklin, and Sean G. Griffin, Seattle area actors will play Mary Lennox, Mrs. Medlock, and Colin, as well as the ensemble. And finally, in this section, later this month, the Public Theater will bring back Richard Nelson's critically acclaimed three-play cycle, The Gabriels, for them to be live streamed on Broadway HD. This is a really interesting kind of new twist on what Broadway HD does in live streams. The three plays Hungry, What Did You Expect, and Women of a Certain Age shine an important spotlight on the 2016 political election year, and I imagine will probably look much different than they did last fall. Women of a Certain Age, I think, officially opened on election night. So if you saw them before election night, I have a feeling they take on a different connotation now than they did then. From March 22nd through 24th, the performances will stream live beginning at 7:50 p.m. Eastern Time. Interesting time, make note of that. Then Broadway HD subscribers will have an opportunity to binge watch the previous night's performance on demand all the way up until the next live stream. James, this is really interesting. We've seen live streams from Broadway HD and other places of shows. We've never seen a series of live streams. So that's really interesting to me. I don't know that this is the show that's going to really kind of make a huge groundswell for series streaming. But I think it's a really interesting concept as to how the next step of this could evolve and what other types of things could potentially be streamed. So I'm looking forward to see how well this actually happens.
Yeah, I really am very interested to see how this happens as well. Richard Nelson's shows, The Gabriels, I think that aside from them being limited runs down at the Public Theater, that I think many people who are artistic directors across many of the regional theaters in the United States and around the world might be very interested in seeing this as a marketing tool for the Gabriels, aside from just a feather in the
really
cap of Broadway HD, because these shows, the Gabriels, are definitely things that should be done in the regional theaters, and these were excellent productions. I'm very interested to see if they filmed with an audience, or did they close it?
Because it's going to be a live stream. They haven't filmed it yet.
Oh, it's a live.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're bringing them back. They're bringing back the cast to do them again. They will do them live March 22nd, 23rd, and 24th.
Oh, I misunderstood.
So I'm not sure
that.
If they're
okay.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to sell tickets, or if it'll be a friends and family kind of deal in the audience, but they are going to bring back and do actual live streams.
Huh. Wow. That's awesome. That it's very different. I misunderstood what you were saying before, but that's really interesting. I don't know how they could get an audience in there and the cameras in there as well, because it's a very tight little space if they do it the same way that they did it when I saw them. So, great. I'm looking forward to this. I love new things, and Broadway HD is just continuing to think out of the box. All right, stage to screen news.
Yeah, yesterday, Lionsgate announced that the world premiere of La La Land in Concert, a live-to-film celebration, will take place at Los Angeles' iconic Hollywood Bowl on Memorial Day weekend, Friday, May 26th, and Saturday, May 27th. Oscar winner composer Justin Hurwitz will conduct his Oscar-winning score and Oscar-winning song, City of Stars, of course, with lyrics by Pasquin Paul, performed live-to-film by a 100-piece symphony orchestra, choir, and jazz ensemble, accompanying the film's original vocal recordings. Then this concert will then go on a tour and play with other symphonies across the country. Tickets for the Hollywood Bowl Incarnation go on sale this Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time at Ticketmaster.com and at the Hollywood Bowl box office. James, we've heard a lot of conversations about whether La La Land would be good for a stage musical. I say, no, it would not. But this seems like a really interesting opportunity for people to kind of get a different look at La La Land, to hear it done with a really impressive symphony, with a choir. I think this is really cool. And this is something that if it swings by the Dr. Phillips Center down here in Orlando, I would like to see this far more than I would like to see a fully fledged stage adaptation of the film.
All right. Hidden Figures could become a Broadway musical.
Yes, this is less, you know, this is more a theoretical experiment than anything else. But Simon Thompson from Forbes.com has an article where he basically says that there is a potential for Hidden Figures to become a Broadway musical. He talked with the cast as well as Pharrell Williams, who was one of the composers for the music in the film, about whether or not this would make a good Broadway musical. Janelle Monáe, who is one of the three stars, she plays Mary Jackson in the film. But really before this and her fantastic turn in Moonlight, she was known as a really exciting pop star and an R&B star. She said that she definitely thinks that it's possible. In fact, that Alison Schroeder, who wrote the script for the film, has talked to her about it. Monáe also went on to say that Octavia Spencer, her Academy Award nominated co-star, should be one of the co-stars with if the film actually does transfer to Broadway. She said, quote, "She's the best singer, and so she should definitely sing all of the numbers. She should sing every song in there." Schroeder co-wrote the screenplay with the film's director, Theodore Melfi, and it's based on a book by Margaret Lee Shetterly, but they were actually written at about the same time, which made it weird for the adapted screenplay thing. But I think this would be great. It's not necessarily a story that we generally see on a Broadway stage. You don't see a lot of musicals set at NASA, but if you could get some of the people originally involved with the film to work on a script, maybe even some of the music, and if you can get some of these big time stars to transition with it to Broadway, I'm all for it. I loved Hidden Figures. Made me cry many, many times. So I'm down. I mean, it's not necessarily the most, you know, the Forbes article also talks about some of the other screen to stage adaptations like The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, Mary Poppins, Producers, Hairspray. Those I feel like were much more obvious transitions. This one, not so much, but I wouldn't hate it.
All right. Well, we'll have to see what happens with that. Just a little update from, I think it was yesterday, we were talking about all the different shows at 54 Below. We were chastised for not mentioning that the huge lineup in May and June that they have with all sorts of award winners. Like,
I know where you're going.
Maren Mazzie and Jason Denealy. Vincent Pastor is going to be there. Paolo Sott is going to be there. Robbie Rozelle is going to be there. Brian Stokes Mitchell. I mean,
I love how you just slipped Robbie in there with a bunch of Tony winners. It fits.
It absolutely does. And you know, you have eight opportunities to see Paolo Sott. You only have one opportunity to see Robbie Rozelle, and Paolo's opening for Robbie on June 9th.
Makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, and Stokes. I mean, you could see Stokes 10 times. You know, only see Robbie once. So get your tickets.
Once in a lifetime
show.
Opportunity.
That's right.
Yeah. Once in a lifetime opportunity.
Sell it out. Sell it out. All right. Get us out of here.
With pleasure. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Tuesday with us, and we will be back and talk with you tomorrow.